Hey guys, just a quick note at the top of the episode. Chris and I took a little bit of a break from the show just because I was dealing with some health issues that stopped me from being able to record and even go to the virtual press conferences that the Sky held at the tail end of the season. Chris was in Portland as well, so we took a little bit of time off. So, yeah, I apologize about that. We recorded this episode last Sunday, and since I'm still catching up on work from that break, if you want to call it that, I've just been preoccupied with that. So, anyways, here is the show, and I'm sorry for the break that we took, but we had a fun conversation, and yeah, here it is. Welcome to another edition of the Skyhook Podcast. My name is James Kay, and with me on the line, as always, your co-host, Chris Pennett. Chris, we've had a little bit of a break since the last time we spoke. You were in Portland. I was dealing with some health concerns, but we're finally back on the pod. How are you doing, man?
Good. I mean, the season's been over for the Sky. Obviously, the season not over for four more teams. Still have to crown a WNBA champion for the season for the 2020 year, but good to be back. Good to do our season analysis, our own exit interviews, as you will.
Absolutely, man. And there's actually some chaos going on in the WNBA right now as we speak. I believe the Lynx Storm matchup right now has been postponed due to inconclusive results from the Storm. They had inconclusive COVID results, I should say.
Oh, wow.
And that game has actually been postponed. So that's kind of wild. So there's a lot going on in the W. Unfortunately, the Sky aren't in the playoff picture anymore. We're going to break it down today along with some other storylines that we talked about, that we should talk about, and some of the things that happened over the last couple of weeks since we've been gone. So, I mean, Chris, with this long break just comes, there's a lot to talk about, but let's start off with the first round matchup. I mean, going into this game, I didn't think the Sky really had a substantial chance of winning this one just based on how hot the Sun were heading into the playoffs. I mean, I know they couldn't beat some of the, they couldn't beat the Aces or Storm, and they had a couple of matchups since August that really, that kind of kept them at lower in the standings, but I felt that Skytown had a little bit of hope that maybe they could pull off something here in the first round. But what were your thoughts going into this one? I mean, did you think the Sky had a chance? And what were your thoughts with the game overall?
I thought they had a chance. I thought they had some time to rest. Obviously, I didn't account for Alyssa Thomas going all the way off as she did. I mean, she's a bear in the lane from the top of the key to the basket. But I thought they had a good chance. They played Connecticut tough. I think maybe with what I was forgetting when they had that matchup against them and they lost that close game late, they'd had both Azaree Stevens and Diamond DeShields in that game and still couldn't come all the way back. They couldn't hold an early lead, and then they couldn't come back from a large deficit. Time just caught up with them. You know, they squeezed out two more wins after losing two of their key players. The other players stepped up in their absence, but we should have seen it when they couldn't hold a lead against Atlanta and when they had trouble against Washington. So even though the Mystics ended up making the playoffs, the writing was on the wall. There was a key moment in the first half of the game where Cheyenne Parker, who'd been really not the entire heart of the team, but she probably spells out the emotions of the team, I think, better than anyone. She's frank in post-game and pre-game interviews. She's outspoken on the court. She's got her – there are no real secrets when it comes to Cheyenne Parker in terms of what's going on with the team and what's going on with the game. And there was a moment where there was a loose ball and Alyssa Thomas just bodily dove on top of her to get a jump ball call. I mean, we know Alyssa Thomas. We know that she is one of the biggest and strongest players in the league. And Cheyenne's not small, but it just looked like it knocked the wind out of her. And then there was a play in the second half where she just bumped Cheyenne about 5 feet into an out of bounds call, and the referees didn't make a call. And that was just a typical of the ball game. So once things got going, and it stayed close through the first half, but Sky were out of gas. They were out of gas. You can't lose a player like Azare, who's a mainstay in the rotation, and Diamond, who's also a mainstay in the rotation, and have enough to compete with a team like Connecticut, even without Jonquel Jones.
Yeah, man. I mean, the Sun are a really well-coached team. Anytime you have someone like Kurt Miller, and you can make the argument with James Wade, even when Azare and Diamond go down, I mean, there's still going to be a little bit of confidence in that you believe in James Wade, you believe in Vander Quiggs, and to maybe just lead you through that struggle. So, I mean, like the Sun, they heading into this season, I mean, they started off horribly. It was a very notable storyline throughout the league when they started off, what was it, I think 0-4? I mean,
and 1-6 at one point.
Yeah. I mean, they were really struggling and they were able to pull it together. You know, the writing was on the wall. I think you were correct in saying that. I mean, this guy lost, what, 4 games in a row heading into the playoffs? I mean, you just need more momentum than that if you're going to pull off. I don't think this is considered an upset for the Sun. But, I mean, this guy, they ran out of energy, like you said. And I just think about the emotional toll these players have gone through this season. I mean, you lose Diamond and Azare on the same day, that morning of when you're about to face the Storm. And you're dealing with that. You're dealing with being in a situation where you're just trapped in the bubble. You're not able to see your family, your pets, your loved ones. You know, it's really hard to be in a situation like this where you're vying for a championship. That's your light at the end of the dark tunnel. And then your championship hopes kind of go away when you lose someone who's supposed to be your number one player in Diamond Shields and a very valuable contributor in Azare. And it's hard to plow forward when that light is no longer there. And you're kind of just left in the dark, not really being able to, I mean, this is a shitty metaphor, but I mean, you're really just kind of stuck, kind of hoping the season ends just because you see the top of the league and how dominant it is. You know, you could see in terms of energy, I mean, the Sky, I mean, they had the 9th worst defensive rating over the last 7 games and they had the 9th worst totals in just like points allowed, and were 11th in opponents' offensive rebounds per game. I mean, those are energy stats. You know what I mean? The Sky just didn't quite have it, and not because they lacked heart, but this was just the result of a team that was really battered by injuries and, you know, lost that energy late in the season. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Point. There's no other way around it. Like you said, losing Azare especially just hurt them in the half court, because we've known the Sky have had trouble on defense, especially in the half court. And they were having trouble with transition defense at times as well. But every time we had press conferences, Coach Wade would say, they're pulling it together. There's some things that we did and we didn't do, but we can, you know, he's always the same in terms of like, we'll fix it up at practice. And the things to clean up seemed like that list of things to clean up was shrinking a bit. And Azare was a big part of that. Diamond too, even a limited Diamond is a really, really, she works at defense. She's not going to go in there and not give it, give it her all is I think really the thing about it. She would always pick a spot at some point when the player she was defending was napping, get a steal, get into their shirt, cause, you know, disrupt their dribble. And so you not only lose a help side defender in the post, you lose one of your better on ball perimeter defenders as well. And what really ends up happening is that you put more pressure in terms of minutes and energy and responsibility on your main rotation players, specifically Cheyenne, Allie, Courtney, and really Ruthie, who had to take on the assignment of more minutes in her first season. Now, I know we're going to come to it later, but Ruthie did a really admirable job in terms of her growth. So let me back up, because I hate when announcers and pundits say, did a good job, when they could have just said what they meant to say. Ruthie's growth this year was admirable, and I don't know how many people expected it. She wasn't going to be Rookie of the Year. That was either going to go to Chenity Carter or Crystal Dangerfield, and I'm really happy with the Crystal Dangerfield pick. But I think she showed a ton of promise. She did, in terms of players who have a high floor, I think she exceeded even that. We knew that she was a floor running big, and she showed it in spades in tough games. She got to the free throw line. She defended about as well as a rookie could be expected to defend in a league that's still pretty much ruled by forwards and post players, notwithstanding Sue, Diane, and Courtney. And I mean Angel McCautry, but Angel McCautry's a tweener. I'm getting a little bit on the tangent here. You put a lot of pressure on those three and those four players I mentioned, and Gabby Williams then has to step up and play minutes in the starting role, and she's got to be a 2, 3, 4, 5. It's a lot. It's just a lot for one team to recover to. Teams are trying to get into that 7 or 8-player rotation going into the playoffs anyway, but the Sky didn't really have a chance to rest anybody for the playoffs because they lost two of their most important pieces. It just wasn't there. They didn't have the time. And when they didn't have the time, then they didn't have the energy.
Yeah. It's a shame, because I really think that this was a team that really could have battled with these teams at the top of the playoffs. You know, like these other teams, maybe outside of the Storm, they don't run 10 deep. And I hate to keep saying that over and over again on these podcasts, truly. But I mean, that was something that when you looked at this team heading into the season, you saw how vulnerable the other teams in the league were because of what COVID brought. I mean, it's unfortunate. We can go into our 2021 Chicago Sky outlook right now, or we can save it. But I am worried about what's going to happen with this team heading into next season if COVID allows us to have next season start at its normal time. Just because everyone else is about to get better again. And this team showed when it was healthy, and it never was 100% healthy. In fact, I think that Diamond knocks off 10% if we're going to put it in a scale like that. This team was at most 90% healthy throughout the season and never really strung together games where they could be healthy all at once, maybe outside of the opener, but even Diamond was banged up then. And then you just look at like how competitive the team is when it was healthy, and then how now they're going to come back next season. And the Mystics, I mean, do you want to talk about the 2021 outlook right now? Because I have some thoughts and how, you know, this season's end really does kind of make me nervous just looking at the landscape of the league. I mean, I don't know if that's something you've thought about, but I'm worried for this team. And I think about their championship window, how other teams in the league are just about to improve mightily. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The issue with that, I'm going to get on you for a second, because there hasn't been that much that's changed with the team that we didn't talk about a month or so ago. I am still very cautious about Azaray's results. I want to see what happens with that, because cartilage conditions in tall players worry me.
Yeah.
That's going to affect you in the knees, and that's just your base. And if you can't run for that long, then you end up in a really, really bad spot. But we haven't gotten results back yet. Mm-hmm. With the other teams in the league, I mean, they haven't added anybody necessarily. So outside of the offseason, what comes from that, the Sky are in the same position as they were mid-season when they were vying for a number two seed. They really are waiting on Azaray's test results. Diamond left the bubble for personal reasons. So we are waiting for – we're still in the same spot in terms of waiting for Diamond to take that next step next season. From the outside, I think the worry is, you know, will the league be able to come back to having games in stadiums and moving forward economically from where they have with the new salary cap increase. That I think is the main concern. And honestly, from what I'm hearing from just regular people, not sports pundits, because you can't go to sports pundits about COVID stuff, people seem to have this general feeling that we're going to be back watching games with each other in some capacity next year, I think a greater capacity than we are now. Don't tell Ricky that, but people seem really confident.
I think that's just insane. I'm worried about next season, to be honest with you. Like, if we're going to start in, like, late spring, like, let's just say that, like, the WNBA season were to start in its normal time frame and we have a non-bubble season, that's going to come in May, and that would be around, 14 months into COVID. So the idea would be that a vaccine, usually it takes a year to 18 months to develop it. So that we're still flirting with that time period in which they're still developing, and maybe hopefully they'll be testing to see if a vaccine will work for this. And if that doesn't happen, I have a really, really hard time seeing that sports will come back, at least. I don't know. I mean, you see what the NFL has done. Apparently there was someone who tested positive with the Kansas City Chiefs, like someone in the stands tested positive, and they did a good job of finding out who that person was in contact with at the stadium, and they were able to nip that in the bud. But outside of that, I mean, I don't know. I have a hard time imagining that this is all going to be solved, especially with the hysteria that's going to be coming in November with the presidential election. So it's going to be interesting. I worry. I mean, let's just say that the COVID is figured out by next spring and we have, you know, a normal season. I mean, the Aces will get back Kelsey Plum, maybe even Liz Cambage. Now, we don't know how that fit will work out with MVP Asia Wilson. But, I mean, that's still a scary team if they get even some more outside shooting. The Mystics, I mean, the Mystics are going to be back, man. I think Elena Deladon, LaToya Sanders, Natasha Cloud, and probably Tina Charles, depending on how that contract situation plays out there, they're all going to be back, and that adds another team at the top.
True.
Storm, I mean, even if – let's just say – and I don't think that Sue Bird's going to retire until after the next Olympics, because I do think that her and DT want to, you know, have that stage one last time, and that before they ride off into the sunset. And, I mean, their post-careers are going to be fantastic also. But the Storm, okay, then they just insert an all-star caliber point guard in with Jordan Canada, and they are able to run it back without really losing any steam. And the Sparks are, I think they're a really interesting case, because I think they have a decent amount of free agents coming into this next offseason with Candace Parker, Chelsea Gray, NECA, Shanae, and I believe Simone Augustus is also up. And they're probably not going to be able to retain everyone, but that's still going to be a solid team. And I mean, we just don't know what these other jumps are going to look like. If the Atlanta Dream are able, if they have Kennedy Carter for the entire season as well, like that, if they can build something there in a non-bubble season where they're able to piece things together. And then, you know, the Sun are going to have Jonquel Jones back. So, I mean, everyone is going to get a little bit stronger, and I just don't know what the Sky are going to be able to do to improve, because this team loves each other. I mean, you see that. I mean, everything they post is just about how much they enjoy one another and how they believe in one another. And that's also a trait that you want in your team, and you don't want to just throw that away. And Chris, I was going to ask you this. Do you know the status of Cheyenne Parker's contract? Because I thought in my notes I'd written down that she was up in 2021, and I wasn't sure if that was after the season or if that is, like, next year she's just not going to be with the Sky. I mean, that's also a piece they're going to miss potentially. But do you know the answer to that?
Let's see if I can find that.
But I mean, let's just say that they lose Cheyenne. You do have Ruthie that can come in year two, and she had, again, I was so impressed with her. Not that I know anything, but like she looked great at a lot of the moments when they really needed her to step up. And she's just a great addition to that front court that they really needed and addressed in the draft. You know, they have Vanderquicks coming back, and we don't know the results of that cartilage issue with Azaray, and that really makes me nervous. And I know, again, I'm just a pessimist, so like when it comes to these situations, I always assume the worst. I wish Azaray, like, the best health possible with that. And hopefully Diamond will just be able to come in and do what she does, because when we saw her this season, she was incredible. But I just look at these other teams, and I worry, you know? I mean, that if you're the Sky, you have to worry about what the Mystics, Aces, and Storm are going to look like. Because, and also the Lynx, now that they know that Krister Dangerfield is the truth and that she's going to be she's just looked ready to prove everyone wrong heading into this season. She just, you know, she won Rookie of the Year for a reason. The Lynx are just going to be super tough. It's just a really competitive league right now, and that's so great that we get to be a part of it. But, I mean, it's just – I just have a lot of – I mean, in terms of the championship window, I think the Sky had such a great chance of taking care of business this year if they were fully healthy. And it just – the championship window isn't closed by any means. I don't, obviously, we can't say that after – you know, just looking at the talent this team has, obviously. But – you do have to worry a little bit just looking at what next season could potentially look like with these other teams, but I digress.
There's some of that to be sure, but I've never been a fan of talking about championship windows because everybody makes a big deal about it. And then something changes it with that team or another team and the championship window is altered. So,
and you can open windows, Chris, you can open windows.
Right. But the whole the talk is always is like, is the window closing? Is the window opening? The only thing I think that really concerns me about that is that Courtney and Allie will be a year older, and Steph will be a year older. That's really the concern for me. The team has a lot of camaraderie, and that comes from the coach on down. But that didn't do anything when they traded to Stu for Azaray. Z came in, a Stu came out. Sidebar, I have no idea why Dallas doesn't use a Stu.
It blows my mind. Anytime you watch that team, you just think, what, they really can't use a Stu do right now? Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but...
No, I said it, so obviously I wanted that.
Yeah.
That didn't alter team chemistry at all. And I don't think that we ever really talked about it altering team chemistry, what it would be like when Z came into the fold, and she seemed to come in without any kind of any difference really, which was great. So I'm not sure who they're going to bring in. I will say that there's been some talk around about the Sparks making another early exit and them needing to, and a lot of wild speculation on who teams should pick up. I don't follow everybody. So a lot of the stuff I've seen has come from our man Eric Nemchuk. And he is fully on board with blowing it up if that means that the Sky have a chance to get to bring Candace Parker kind of home, because Naperville isn't really Chicago.
I was gonna say.
But either her or NECA would be good pickups. It depends on who you would lose, because I think any trade would involve Cheyenne Parker. And even if Candace Parker is much better than Cheyenne, or better, I'll say better, not necessarily much, much better than Cheyenne Parker. She's better. She's it's debatable how much better that is.
It's really interesting because then. Oh, sorry, I'll let you finish.
Oh no, I mean, you bring in a Cheyenne, you bring in a Candace Parker. Your team is better. What changes? That I think is a good question on what changes with team chemistry. Neko Ogunbowale, I don't know if there's that much that you have to worry about, because I think that she has no problem trusting the coach or the players there. Mm-hmm. Candace, I think, is just a little bit different because she's a superstar, and things are going to change when you bring a superstar into your ranks, and especially a superstar that's won a championship. You know, what role are they going to take in the offense? What role are they going to take in the locker room? And this is also all speculation. Candace Parker hasn't even said that she's trying to leave Los Angeles yet.
I don't think she's going to leave, to be honest with you.
If those are the questions that we're looking at, who you bring in the offseason, that's, I think, one of the questions that you have. I have another thing on that, but I want to go back to you first.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I don't think that Candace Parker is going to give up living in LA to come to Chicago, to be honest with you. It'd be fun. I mean, it would be really fun to see what this guy could do. And again, you know, we don't have all this information necessarily readily available to us in terms of these contracts and what they would need to do to make that work. I mean, there is a package out there in which you could ship off some of these pieces to potentially like free up some cap to be able to land Candace Parker. I just have a hard time imagining her leaving LA after what she's been able to accomplish. But and she's also not from Chicago. Like Naperville is not Chicago. Let's like say like margarita pizza is, or like not like margarita flatbread is pizza. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like
not margarita's pizza.
Yeah, come on. Get out of here. It would be very interesting after seeing like all this guy's players really improving too. I mean, we can talk about this now. I'll actually end with this real fast. So like, you know, Kalia Copper was a most improved player of the year candidate. Cheyenne, again, you all over the broadcast, which I typically keep on mute, but I would sometimes unmute. You'd hear people just rave about the season Cheyenne had. I mean, she was a bully throughout the season. And, you know, when she's really making everything, like putting her game together, I mean, she's really tough to beat on the boards and in the paint. Courtney Vandersloot, I mean, this is the part that I wanted to talk about. I mean, you know, even with the disappointing end to the season, there was this really fun late in the season stat correction that made Courtney Vandersloot the first player in WNBA history to average 10 assists in a season, man. That, I know they only like played 22 games, but that is still so meaningful to me. Like, you know, it's not even that she's just the first player to average 10 assists in a season. I mean, she's the only player to average more than 8, you know? And the next highest mark, I believe, came from Tisha Panichero, who averaged just 8, and I think that was like either in 2000 or 2002. So, I mean, this is something we don't see often.
Right.
You know, it's unfortunate because I really thought the Sky would be contenders before these injuries. And, you know, that Sloot having historic season, I think about that podcast we did with REA where we talked about over-unders and how, you know, I think I was the only one that took the over on Courtney averaging more than 10 assists per game. And you correctly thought she would average 10, which congrats to you on that. But I really thought
I didn't realize how outside of the box averaging 10 assists was.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we've never seen before. And, you know, I thought that maybe that would be more like the cherry on top of the sundae, you know, but it ended up, you know, the Sky kind of ended up only getting the cherry in the end. You know, they didn't really get the playoff push that they thought they would get. And I mean, that was the expectation going into the season, making the finals. But even like outside of that, I mean, it's awesome to see that Courtney was able to do this. And I don't think she'll ever be underrated ever again after she like ripped out the assist part of the record book and started her own page, you know, like she, mm-hmm. you know, it'll take her a couple of years to get to the number one spot. And, but I mean, she's just not that far off. So Courtney Vandersloot is the true point god. I don't want to hear anyone say otherwise, because what she's been able to do is, especially over these last 4 years, it's just unprecedented.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, obviously we're Chicago Sky fans, we're Chicago Sky broadcasters, but the way that she commands the offense is just different, man. Like I want to always say, for anybody who listens and for anybody who's just watched more WNBA than we have, we weren't watching the WNBA in 97, so sure, mm-hmm. we missed a lot of people. But basketball changes era to era, and it's changed from that era to this one. Not to downplay any of the accomplishments of the players who've come before, but the way that she commands an offense is just different. It's different than what we see, I think, in the league. Sue Bird is a legend. DT is a legend. But Courtney just holds the offense on a string at any given time. The way that she gets those easy layups is because every defense has to stay honest on the pass. And it's infectious. It's infectious in the way that gifted passers make an offense better, because everybody then is not only looking for the extra pass, they also see the extra passing lanes ahead of time. They're not going to be as good as that person leading them, but they're going to be able to see those spots open up, and they're going to make everybody better. Everybody's looking for the ball. Everybody's hustling. Everybody's running the floor the way that, in a different way than other offenses would. So I think that's what makes her, as you say, the point god, the point goddess, the point god, you know, any any moniker you want to put on Courtney Vandersloot, she's earned. Gonzaga's had two brilliant point guards come out of their program in the last 30 years. And both of them, I think, are going to be Hall of Famers. I think Courtney's going to be the second Hall of Famer when she finally decides to hang it up.
Man, I hope so. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see back like 40 years down the road. And let's hope we have 40 more years based on the turmoil that we've seen in 2020. I mean, holy crap, I can't believe that we're living through all of this right now, all this chaos. Hope everyone's safe. But I think about like 40 years from now when people see that Courtney Vandersloot's, hopefully she'll be named an all-star more than twice.
Yeah.
You know, when they see how, and I think that she will become the leading assist leader. I mean, she'll become the all-time leader in assist. When they look back and see that she's only made like four or five all-star games, let's just say, how people are going to view her and see, like, is she a Hall of Famer, you know, just because of how few All-Star games and how the stats don't necessarily, outside of the assist numbers, don't pop out at you in the way that they should, you know? It's like she's truly someone that you have to watch game to game to be like, oh, wait, no, that person is the best point guard in the league, you know? She makes these plays and, like, you know, pass two assists. I'm sure that she would lead the league in that as well just because of how she's able to set up players that, you know, that she doesn't get the assist on, you know, like she's able to, she really just commands the floor in the way that other players, other guards in this league, I should say, just don't. So it's going to be interesting because I just hope that, I mean, I don't think that she will be underrated, at least in by anyone who's covering the league now and who are fans of the league. I mean, there's no way you can underrate Courtney Vandersloot and what she brings to the court anymore. I mean, the stats just, they're too overwhelming for anyone to do that anymore. But the thing I just can't get past when it comes to Sloot, and that everyone, again, I'm so glad that everyone kind of jumped on the bandwagon for a while, but she's not, outside of, again, the improved shooting numbers and offensive numbers as a scorer, I mean, she isn't doing anything different than she was.
The consistency, yeah.
You know, like this is something she's been doing forever, and, you know, at least in the last four seasons, and probably would have been doing more so if she was, you know, didn't have to, if she wasn't a part of these teams that had stars like Elena Deladon, Sylvia Fowles, you know what I mean? Like she is someone that probably would have been more, she probably would have had better numbers, honestly, than she had in the last 4 years throughout her career if she was put in that role. And she, it's not to say that she didn't develop and kept evolving as a player. I'm not trying to take away from the work that she's put in. Obviously, it's not what I'm trying to do here. But I think that's the part that, as someone who covers the Sky, I just thought it was really interesting to see all these, everyone starting to react now when this is just something over and over again she's just been doing, even though the Sky haven't necessarily been a winning team since, you know, before James Wade came in. So maybe that's what this really comes down to, is the winning. But the numbers have been there, you know, the numbers have been there.
Yeah, you're right. It's hard to shine when you're next to two really bright lights, and Syl and Elena are two of the brightest lights in the league, never mind the two of the brightest lights in Chicago team history. But you're right. It never makes sense to me that Courtney was an all-star her first season, and then she was an all-star last season, and in between, she stayed home in the summer. You know, I don't know how many times that she was asked to try out for the U.S. Olympic team. Probably not that many because of, again, Sue and Diana. But she's been one of the best players in terms of leading an offense, opening up an offense, in the last 5 years for certain. She always was racking up assists, but the turnover ratio, you know, the turnovers were a little higher. And now she is doing all of this and keeping hold of the ball. I still remember a specific play earlier in the season, and I can't recall who the Sky were playing. It might have been Las Vegas. But Azarade had gotten off to a pretty tough start shooting, And there was a play where she forced up a shot, came down, got the ball, and kind of forced up a three or a contested jump shot. And Vegas came down, and I'm pretty sure they scored on their next trip. And Courtney came back, got the ball, immediately went to Z's side, got a ball screen, gave her the ball back at the free throw line for a jump shot, and she drained it. And that's just an instinctual play that a great point guard does to get a shooter who needs to see the ball go down another easy attempt and get that in their heads. Okay, get out of your funk. All right, you've seen one go down. You know you can make this shot. I'm going to put you in a good spot to succeed. And not only is that good for a basketball team, that's good for just anybody you work with, right? Like, I'm going to put you in a spot to succeed. I'm going to make you remember that you are this person, that you're good, that you're better than you think you are right now. Because who else sees that? You know, nobody's talking about that in their little reactions to the game. I'm going to give myself credit right now. I'm going to pat myself on the back because I saw it and I noticed it immediately. And I didn't see anybody else say that. But that's a very little infinitesimal moment that spells out exactly who Courtney Vandersloot is. And so for that person, that player, to average the stats that she does and still not be recognized as an all-star is a flaw in the system. Yeah. So, yeah, I think she's a Hall of Famer.
Oh,
if that's what we're coming back to.
Oh, my God. No doubt. No fucking doubt. I think more people – yeah, no. There's no doubt that she's a Hall of Famer. You can't be in the top five in assists. And, again, she'll be well above that next season. Even though Diana Taurasi is still pushing forward, she'll eventually pass DT at some point. But yeah, no, Courtney Vandersloot is a Hall of Famer. I just wish that she could enjoy the recognition she'll at least get down the line for what she was able to put together in her career. I hope that includes a championship. It's definitely in the cards, even though, again, anything can happen in this league. And it continues to get stronger as well. So I'm hoping, even despite that, that the Sky are able to piece something together and get her a championship, because she's really been through everything with this city. And you know what? The Sky came into the WNBA in, what, 2006, 2007. And then she came in like 2 years after that. You know, she's really been the pulse of this team. And I mean, you can't say it was Candace Dupree, as much as she's an amazing basketball player and probably the most consistent WNBA player of all time, just in terms of what she brings to the table. But, like, this really has been Courtney's team. You know, I mean, she is the face of the franchise. And I just, again, I really hope that down the line she really is viewed as one of the greatest point guards in basketball history. I mean, we shouldn't even limit this to the WNBA. What she's been able to do for her entire career is just something that I hope that basketball fans eventually catch up with and notice, because her numbers are insane. And what she brings, and she's just so competitive too and humble, and she never wants to talk about herself. And like, I don't know how any player could join, be on her team and not just feel like, not feel inspired to do more for their teammates, just to see what Courtney does and what she sacrifices night to night. You know, Courtney Vandersloot could be a 15-point-per-game scorer if she wants, you know? Like, she's someone that is so pass-first that she doesn't necessarily get to show off that offensive ability and her ability as a scorer. And she did it way more this season, which I think caught the eyes of people especially. But I don't know. We could talk about Courtney Vandersloot forever, man. But hey, guys. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of our show. Unfortunately, Chris's mic cut off in the second part of our conversation. And since I host and produce the show, I wasn't able to see that when we were doing this. And I apologize about that. I'm not entirely sure what's going on with our tech and Zoom, but we're going to try to figure that out. In any case, thanks for tuning into the show. And if you want to contact us, you can do so by emailing our mailbag, which is theskyhookmailbag@gmail.com. You can also tweet at us. Our handle is @skyhookin. And follow the Windsider Podcast Network, where our show is featured. They do some incredible work, and they have a podcast for every show, for every team in the W. So definitely check that out. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time.